And we're back. It's the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. You can check us on the web, taylor-report.com. I will confess we've had a few problems technically, and some of the programs are not up yet. I promise you they will be, but not. I don't know if it's going to be in short order or long order. Let's make it a short order. If it comes to ordering, I'd like it short. You can write to us, taylor@ciut.fm. I'm always glad to hear from you. And by the way, we have been hearing, and it helps us producing the program. We're going to be talking next with Steve Gowans, a wonderful column called What's Left. You can go to gowans.wordpress.com. He's got two brilliant articles, one about spying. Everybody loves a spy story, so I urge you to go to that. But also about the situation in Syria, what type of parties are, I chose the wrong word, what type of gangs are opposing the government of Syria? And here to help us out is Steve Gowans himself. Are you there, Steve?
Yes. Hi. Hello.
You broke up a little bit, but I think you're still with us. can you hear me all right?
I can.
We're going to call you back and make another connection. This is the Taylor Report, CIUT, 89.5 FM. And I'll tell you, just to outline, we're going to ask Steve to help us on the question of the allegation that this these people are fighting for democracy and to bring a new modern government to Syria. This is really almost peculiar. As some commentators have pointed out, that little line of propaganda seems to be dying out, and now it's becoming kind of raw power, actually. Among the things we need to get into are the so-called Arab Spring and all the little elections that flowed from it that people found so admirable. And it was interesting. I want to ask Steve about the degree to which these this spring seem to be financed by Qatari and Saudi money. We have just lost the Egyptian president. He fell and chipped a tooth, I understand. Those who are very enthusiastic about him keep talking about he was elected properly. And so we need to know. Steve, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
You're doing your best, Steve. It's not your fault. I'm just saying, by way of lead-in, is that the people opposing the government of Syria have been identified as democratic forces, and you take up this matter at gowans.wordpress.com, What's Left. Tell us about who these Democrats are that the State Department likes.
Right. Yeah, and it's interesting to ask why it is that they've been, depicted as democratic. Now that the Syrian rebels have discredited themselves through their summer
Steve?
Yeah.
I'm very sorry. That line just seems to break up. I don't know a remedy right now, but we'll see if we can make another attempt. My apologies, but it's on our end. It's breaking up.
Okay.
Thank you. We'll just continue here, Phil and myself, and with our apologies to Stephen Gowans. We can see if we can get through to a line, get that line clear. But I'll just repeat what I know. Stephen Gowans makes the point that, in fact, that the main fighters in Syria, the armed groups, and they're getting their arms from Turkey. They're getting their arms from Jordan. The United States openly tells the world that it is going to and is assisting. We knew that. Thank them for telling us. I guess Mr. Snowden might have told us otherwise. They are also, and their arms are being paid for by Qatar and Saudi Arabia. Now, Steve Gowans points out in his article that they don't in fact claim to be democratic. They in fact claim that their goal is the removal of the government of Hafez al-Assad, but Bashar Assad. So that is not a democratic platform, as Steve points out. If you want something and you want it so badly and you're being denied that thing, yet you need to resort to armed struggle to achieve it, you need to share with the class what that is. And they have shared. But actually, the editorialists and writers at The Star and the Globe and Mail, the New York Times and other Western media have turned themselves into knots trying to get around the bald declaration of the combatants in Syria that they are in fact Sunni or a sectarian element. They are not a Sunni population. These are sectarian elements financed by Saudi Arabia and Qatar who want a particular faction of one faith to make war on the other. And as the president of Syria has pointed out, no state can tolerate that. If you have a state of all the people, you know, for the people, of the people, by the people, you cannot allow any group to say, no, no, it's for us. Because we counted and we represent more people. So we are now going to annihilate our opponents, annihilate them. They promise that when it comes to the Shia and the Alawi. Now, the Toronto Star, the New York Times, and by the way, that's one of the reasons I do recommend people read The Angry Arab. I know people get angry at The Angry Arab. I agree, so do I. But he points out that they haven't. These elements have not hidden that this is what they want. But the New York Times and others have claimed that the government of Syria is it. That was fun. Oh, well, we had a visitor from space too. The government of Syria is sectarian. So he has challenged them and said, "Show me where, show me when." And then he said, "Let me tell you, they have not done that. The government of Syria has not advocated or endorsed or discussed people in terms of their faith." That their enemies have done that. And the other important point is that the people of Syria, by all accounts, are probably more in support of the government than not. If you like the rebels, go ahead and like them, but you cannot claim they represent broad popular opinion, etc. But moving this issue, and I intend to do this with Mr. Gowans if he is able to speak, and bless his heart, he's a very nice man, is now people want to change the discussion to Mr. Morsi and his issue of democracy. But I want people to remember that Mr. Morsi got a head start on his opponents when it came to running for office, just as the leader of Tunisia got a head start on his opponents during the spring. Because they had Qatari money, Brotherhood money. And all those people who live here, and 2 years ago in our program, we had various people saying, oh, the 1% rule the 99%. This is not a real democracy. The plutocrats rule here. They all seem to have gone silent on us. And they're not saying, obviously that's true also in Egypt. Mr. Morsi didn't run an honest, fair campaign. It was money versus people without money. But on top of that, a much more important issue emerged. As president of Egypt, President Morsi said young Egyptians should join sectarian rebel fighters inside Syria. He's the president of Egypt and he's advocating. Oh, I think we may have Steve Gowans. Steve, I hope this works. Are you there? I'm asking the question, and it's probably unfair to you, but there is great discussion of democracy also in Egypt, and your analysis goes at it from a class point of view. What sort of democracy is it that everybody's crying over in Egypt? those who are advocating that Syria needs some democracy. Are you yourself sort of conflating this discussion of what is a democracy?
Okay, so you're asking about... Actually, I don't think you've solved this whole problem. I'm getting a lot of feedback here.
Mm-hmm.
I don't. Can you hear me?
I can. I have to confess, it's fairly weak. But if they're hearing you on the other side, they are. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Yes, we can hear you.
Okay. Concerning Egypt, I think one of the interesting ways to look at Egypt is to look at what really is the ruling class in Egypt. I'm not sure that many people have pointed out that I think that the ruling class in Egypt is this group of elite military officers.
Mm-hmm.
The military elite, certainly a social class, it intermarries. They go to the same schools. They're trained in the same place, which is the United States. Their families interact, and they also tend to dominate, or they have the pervasive economic interest throughout Egypt. The government governs in Egypt, but the ruling class rules the government. And it seems as if the ruling class, the elite military within Egypt, have been able to tolerate this kind of Muslim Brotherhood-dominated government for a time. And now they've found that government intolerable and have ousted it. I'm not sure if that was the question you were asking me. Or...
Hello? Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, okay. This has been an adventure, but you're doing great. You were explaining to me about the Egyptian and this false claim that the people in Syria are fighting for democracy. Your article says very clearly they don't even claim to be fighting for democracy.
No, I don't. And now that kind of the Syrian rebels have discredited themselves in various ways. To their summary execution of prisoners and their shelling of civilian airships and their terrorist car bombings and so on. Some people who insist on giving moral support to the rebels say, well, we're not backing the bad rebels, we're backing the good rebels of the Free Syrian Army who are secular and fight for democracy and are backed by the U.S. and Britain and France, who we know are genuinely interested in promoting democracy abroad. But there's nothing, secular about the Free Syrian Army, and there's nothing democratic about it either. This rebel army, the Free Syrian Army, which some people call the Foreign Supply Army, if you look at why it says it exists, why its leaders say it exists, they say it exists for one reason and one reason alone, and that's to remove Bashar al-Assad as president. So its whole program then is negative. It has no positive aspirations, either democratic or secular. And, you don't have to be committed to a secular society to belong to the Free Syrian Army. Indeed, the organization's military command is Islamist-dominated. And just last week in the Wall Street Journal, one of the leaders of the FSA said that the organization is dominated by Islamist groups that are in close coordination with al-Nusra, the al-Qaeda-aligned terrorist group. So, the idea that the FSA is secular is mistaken. The idea that it aspires to create a democratic society is mistaken, too. I'm not saying it doesn't aspire to create a democratic society, but it doesn't say that's what its goal
is. We're speaking to Steve Gowans, and it's gowans.wordpress.com. Steve, on this issue of the spring and how it's the U.S. has been using the concept of the Arab Spring, and this plutocratic money went into Tunisia, right? It was plutocratic money, that is Qatari money, went into Egypt to create the Morsi leadership. Would you agree with that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Qatar was supporting the Muslim Brotherhood and certainly giving the Morsi government a lot of money, yes.
And, you know, so it strikes me that when we're hearing now, I don't know why, it seems almost like people want to divert attention from the legitimate right of the state of Syria to defend itself against terrorists and against external interference in its affairs. I want to just ask you about this. Morsi, the last dramatic thing he did that I recall was that he called for the Egyptian youth to volunteer to fight inside Syria alongside the cannibals and the kidnappers, and he called for NATO to establish a no-fly zone over Syria, which would be an act of war by anybody's definition. He also called for the expulsion of Syria. You know, even if you're a democratically elected president, that should make you highly unsavory in the international community. Other states should ask, actually, that you go away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no.
Pardon the speech.
Certainly interfering in the affairs of Syria. And, you know, it should also be pointed out that being from the Muslim Brotherhood and representing a government that was essentially a Muslim Brotherhood government, I mean, one of the reasons that he might encourage jihadists to go to Syria is because he would have backed the very strong Muslim Brotherhood organization that exists in Syria and has long been at war with the secular Syrian government. Many people seem to think that, you know, the history of Syria began in March 2011, and they don't go back before March 2011 to see that there's this long series of Muslim Brotherhood organized riots against the secular Syrian government in Damascus, going all the way back to 1964. Some scholars refer to the Arab Spring in Syria, if you want to call it the Arab Spring, as simply the latest chapter in the long civil war in Syria, the long civil war between secular forces and the Muslim Brotherhood.
Well, I'm really glad you make that point. In evaluating the issues, we're so much up against a wall here. Your website, thank goodness, and thank gowans.wordpress.com, you have posted the interview, long interview, the June 2013 interview with the president of Syria. That is not made available to the general public, but as I read it, I'm reading at least a competent, intelligent, conscientious leader laying out all the significant details of what we need to address if we want to solve this. And yet, if I read the Toronto Star and Globe and Mail, he's the one who should practically be assassinated, their approach. Isn't he the one who's upholding the values that everybody here claims that they value so much?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And it's very revealing and enlightening to read the interviews with Assad. And I think that if you read the interviews, many people would be favorably impressed by what they read. Mm-hmm. One of the really interesting things that struck me in reading him, or one of the things that I was inspired to do, is to go back through press reports back to March 2011 when the uprisings were said to have started in Syria, and to read them again and to see what was going on back in March 2011. And, you know, one of the first articles that you come across, if you look at the New York Times, is an article that says, hey, there's not much going on here in Syria. There are a few very small demonstrations, but, you know, there are three or four people saying the revolution has started or something like that. Mm-hmm. And then about a week later, suddenly you have a larger protest happening. And what's interesting about the larger protest is the New York Times is reporting that there's gunfire in these protests, gunfire coming from the demonstrators, and which is kind of at odds with the myth that has arisen since, that the protests in Syria originated as peaceful protests and then were met by force by the Syrian government, forcing the protesters and the demonstrators to take up arms to defend themselves. Now, Assad says, you know, how could these have been peaceful protests when right from the beginning we had police officers being shot at and killed? And when you go back and you look at the New York Times reports, you see indeed that that's what the New York Times was reporting. But, you know, in the last 2 years, the story has somehow become changed to it was all peaceful demonstration. It seems not. I mean, not only did we have people shooting at the police, they had them burning down the Ba'ath Party headquarters in this particular town, setting fire to Syriatel. So you could ask, you know, what would happen in New York City? How would the New York City police react if someone started burning down the Verizon building and burning down the courthouse? That's something else that they burnt down, which is a strange, peaceful uprising.
Yes. You know, it puts one in mind of the films like The Quiet American or Our Man in Havana. Mr. Snowden has put all this intelligence work. Nobody, I don't see any discussion of how much the Western intelligence groups have been kind of busy here. We're assuming that we pay them billions and billions of dollars, but they don't go anywhere and bother anybody.
And there hasn't been much said about, you know, the CIA role. Every once in a while it said, oh, we have CIA people in Jordan training rebels, and we have CIA people in Turkey training rebels. But there's not a lot said about that.
Mm-hmm. I should tell listeners, by the way, that also your most recent column is discussing the whole issue of intelligence apparatuses and spying. And you illustrate very persuasively, as usual, but that the new German state, it will link this to Syria, but the new German state is far more intrusive and spies more on its citizens than that little country called East Germany, the Stasi, ever spied on their people.
Yeah, I mean, they didn't have the technology at the time to be able to intrude into the private lives that the German government
and you go into the class nature of spying. One is spying to preserve one kind of system, and the other is spying for the other, right? Could you elaborate on that?
Yeah, I mean, the Germany's Chancellor Angela Merkel has been defending the spying that Germany does on its own citizens, essentially saying, yeah, but we do it for good. And, you know, when the Stasi did it, was for evil. So it's all right. She says, you know, when liberal democracies do these things, it's always for public safety and the public good.
Yeah, like the liberal democracy that sends soldiers or airplanes to Afghanistan and Libya. And if you don't like that in Germany, they will spy on you.
But it's kind of an advance because at least she's now acknowledging that, in fact, liberal democracies do spy on their citizens. I mean, previously, they'd always deny that. You know, that was only something that the bad guys did.
Mm-hmm. But I think it's great that you discuss these things as clearly as you do in your columns. And it's certainly as we would relate it back again to situation is going on in Syria. When you have armed groups that enter your country and you have people who brag that they pay for those armed groups. If you don't have a police system and an intelligence system, they'll wring your neck, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, yes. And
I think people have said Gaddafi turned out was a cooperating witness, as it were, and he didn't have any, he was not adequately prepared for what they threw at him.
No, and I mean, he could have been spying on people in Libya, and he should have, because there are certainly Islamists who wanted to overthrow him, as we know. But not only could he have been spying on them, I mean, Western countries were spying on people in Libya as well. I mean, it was interesting that the Ottawa Citizen had reports last year about Canadian military intelligence and what they had to say about people in Libya, and other jihadist groups that were bent on overthrowing the Gaddafi government.
Pardon the segue, but I want to ask about how Canada is treating matters. There's a funny idea that the government of Canada has a hands-off attitude. However, they've closed the Syrian offices and expelled the diplomats. and they have said they support the embargo and other steps. Now, to my mind, that's a serious aggression. I mean, it's, let's put it this way. It's very effective aggression against the state of Syria.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, Canada is the reliable U.S. satellite. I mean, if the United States is hostile to Syria, Canada will certainly follow suit.
But it's a particularly, I mean, when that closing embassies is caused, just like with the one with Iran, I mean, that's highly destructive of possible peaceful or reasonable resolution, would you say?
Yes. And you know, the only party that's really interested in any kind of peaceful resolution here has been the Syrian government. And curiously, the press will often say things like, we have to do this to bring Assad to the negotiating table. Well, Assad's always been willing to go to the negotiating table. It's the rebels in the United States and their satellites that won't go to the negotiating table because they establish preconditions which are effectively, okay, you have to step down before we'll negotiate with you. Before we'll negotiate your surrender, you must surrender.
Seriously nasty approach, non-diplomatic. Anyway, your column exposes all of these things. Gowans.wordpress.com, what's left, a great question. Steve Gowans, we apologize for all the technical problems. You've been very eloquent. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye-bye. That's Steve Gowans. I want to just say, yes, Life of Pi, the English Patient authors, the author of The Life of Pi and the author of The English Patient and other authors, 70 altogether, Canadian writers, are calling on Israel to stop evictions of the Bedouin. That's, bless their heart, those are powerful, wonderful writers, and they have shown they have a conscience. We'll talk about this in future programs. I would like them to add to the list, please stop attacking Syria while you're at it, the missiles and everything else. All right, this is the Taylor Report. Write to us, taylor@caut.fm. And for Phil Conlon and Terry, we'll see you next week.